Hi, everybody, and good morning. We're trying to get ourselves together here because there's been a change of place. Tuya and I are in the Little Bear Meditation Center, and if it looks like we're moving house here, we kind of are. So just bear with the lovely background, and we will resume things where we had them before we began our work at the conference, which was a very demanding thing. And some of you were there, and I'm very grateful for your presence or for your presence on the broadcasts, which we tried to make available for everybody. So I see the people who are here, and I just want to welcome you all. Alex, Angela, Anne, Annette, Clesia, Diane, Frederick, Jette, Joanne, John, Louise, Lulu, Louise. Oh, I said that again, didn't I? Sorry. And Lynn, Margot, Mariut, Martha, Maureen, Michael, Natnia. Is that correct? Natnia? Okay. Pura, Rebecca, and Risto from Finland, welcome. And Vera. Okay, welcome. Now, we are working with some of the academic material in the book, The Glamour World Problem. And this material has to do with the technique of indifference. We started that, and I just want to read a little bit just to get us caught up again, because after all, it has been a while, and I wish we could, of course, continue all this while we're having our conference. But if you've been to the conference, you know that from 7 in the morning until 10 at night, we're going strong. So it would not really be possible to do that. Okay, so I'm going to read something for you. And, hopefully, here. Okay, we're just trying to get set up here. What then is Maya? All right, that's a big question. I wonder if any of us could really answer it. In one way, the whole universe is Maya compared to the absolute. At least that's what the Vedantists and those who have written the Upanishads thought. What then is Maya? But he gives a very special definition of it. This, my brother, is not easy to define because it is related to the form-building activity of the planetary logos himself. So we're keeping it on a planetary basis. Obviously, it's a universal factor. However, a consideration of the analogy existing between the microcosm and the macrocosm may help somewhat. The soul creates a threefold expression in the three worlds of human living. This is an occult truism. The outer form, the dual physical body, via dense and vital or etheric, is produced, created, motivated, energized, and conditioned by certain energies and forces emanating from those levels whereon the soul has rightly or wrongly engineered a reaction of identification. This is such an important statement. The idea is that for millions of years, we have this condition of consciousness in which the soul in incarnation is identified with the lower worlds. And well, we're busy redeeming the matter from the moon chain and from the earlier solar system, and it has to be built into certain forms. Form building is redemption. Okay, so if we clothe that matter from an earlier solar system or from the moon chain on certain archetypal etheric forms, then there will be a redemption of that matter because of the relationship in which it finds itself. So rightly or wrongly, well, let's just say for millions of years, or at least, let's say really millions of years, we have been identified with the illusion on the physical plane and also on the astral and mental planes. We call them by different names. We call illusion, glamour, and Maya. Maya has a lot more to do with the etheric physical identification. Now, eventually we have to learn to disidentify ourselves from involvement with these this aggregation of matter, this as DK calls it, this congestion of matter. Now, so anyway, he says, note this phrase, my brother. These make a man what he is. Okay. These energies and forces, and we know they come from so many areas, and in spiritual occultism, we study these different astrological, planetary, zodiacal, ray energies and forces. We study these things so that we can understand what we are being conditioned by. Okay, so these energies, these forces make a man what he is. They give him his temperament, well, at least his temporary temperament, but also when they are soul energies, they give him a more permanent temperament. His profession, the quality upon the physical plane, they make him negative or positive to various types of impacting energy. They give him his character and make him what he appears to be to others. Notice that word appears, because this has a lot to do with the man's vehicle and not so much what he essentially is as a monad. Although even there, we have certain energies and forces which produce a kind of monadic coloring, although pure being is not colored. But the vehicles of pure being are colored. Okay, they produce his coloring, his capacities, and his personality. My goodness, what don't they produce? This is really interesting what all of these energies produce in a human being. And maybe I'll just make this a little bit bigger so we kind of notice that more. So the average man with all these, and we've all been the average man, and we're trying to be something more right now than the average man. With all these, the average man identifies himself. He believes himself to be the form, the medium through which he attempts to express his desires and his ideas. But the form is only a medium. It's only an instrument, and the true inner man is pure being itself. This complete identification with the transient creation, it comes and goes, and with the outer appearance is Maya. Now, that's a wonderful definition of Maya. So when we're talking about Maya, glamour and illusion, we have here a very good definition of Maya. I'll make it big again. This complete identification with the transient creation and with the outer appearance is Maya. You know, when you look in the mirror, do you think that what you see is what you are? That we need to get a deep inner sense of being that relatively formless something that is the observer behind the obvious form. So, you know, it's not so much what you see is what you get. What the senses reveal is not the real individual. And every day, if possible, we should establish in meditation our sense of being that which lies behind the more obvious expression through the vehicle, through form. If we are the witness of our physical nature, our etheric currents, our desires and aspirations, and our mental thoughts, and if we identify with them, we are the victim of Maya. In fact, we have to learn how to really stand behind all of these more obvious things. And by standing behind, we become the true observer. And when you think about who the true observer really is, It is the monad itself. It is pure being itself. At least this is my view of it. It must be remembered that individual Maya is a fractional part of the world of energies and forces which constitute the life expression of the planetary logos, which conditions our planetary life and makes our planet what it appears to be to other planets. So always in occultism, we're trying to differentiate between appearance and reality. And after a while, you know, sometimes we think we see reality and it turns out to be only an appearance, and we have to go farther back and farther back into the state of the pure observer. Okay, going on. So now this is where I wanted to begin today, but, you know, just a little warm up to where we have been, because it's been a while, and we'll see in the future years what we can do to make it possible to, you know, continue this even during the conference. But I have my doubts, you know, because the conference is so demanding. Anyway, the difference between man, the microcosm, and the planetary logos. Now, you know, in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, he's always comparing different types of atoms, the atom of substance, man the atom, the planetary logos as an atom, and the solar logos as an atom. They're all atoms, and they all need to be compared, and they have many, many similarities between themselves. So the difference between man, the microcosm, and the planetary logos, the lord of the world, okay, notice he's calling the planetary logos the lord of the world, and sometimes he calls Sanat Kumara the lord of the world. So anyway, the lord of the world, the macrocosm, lies in the fact, and this is really important, and think about it, the lord of the world is not identified with the Maya he has created. There's always a tendency at first for the human being to identify with his own creations rather than simply realize they are creations. We have this in the creative artists and people who have identified with, I'm recalling a great movie with Alec Guinness called The Bridge Over the River Kwai. And he was a prisoner of the Japanese forces, and he was an engineer, and they made him build a bridge, and the bridge would obviously work against his own side. But he became so identified with the bridge that he had built that he didn't want to blow it up, even when it would have favored the side of the war in which he found himself. So it's possible to become so identified with our creations that we get lost in them, and we have to learn how to extricate ourselves, pull ourselves out of that. So the Lord of the world is not identified with the Maya he has created, and which has its purpose in eventually bringing about the release of the prisoners of the planet. Now, if you go to A Treatise on White Magic, you'll see a lot here about the prisoners of the planet, and essentially they are the various unconscious lives that have to be raised to the condition of consciousness and of self-consciousness. To that Maya that the planetary logos creates for a specific purpose, which he doesn't forget, he is supremely indifferent. And it is this divine indifference which has led to the great theological illusion of an anthropomorphic deity. Now look what he says here, you know. The great majority of people believe in this theological illusion, in an anthropomorphic deity. So, led to the great theological illusion of an anthropomorphic deity and to the belief in the East that our planet is but the background or the plaything of the gods. I think that's a lot closer to the reality. But not this, as in the West, the intervening anthropomorphic deity who cares not about his own divine plan, but about every individual being in their personal nature. What we understand is that God is indifferent to persons, but not indifferent to the soul and the higher aspects of man, whereon the working out of the plan does occur, or at least is guided by those factors in the man. Okay, it is this cosmic indifference which has led to the human glamour Wow, he's talking about a lot of well-accepted things as glamorous, to the human glamour of the inscrutable will of God, and to the affirmation that God is far away and not imminent in every creature and in every atom of which creatures are made. So look, in order to get this more clearly in mind, we have to have the idea not only of a transcendent deity, which is true in a certain sense, but of an immanent, indwelling, all-pervading deity, so that in a way, what you see in front of you is all God, if we understand it in the right way. So we need the balance between the transcendent, which has been emphasized in the West, and the immanent, which has been more emphasized in the East, although Christ did tell us that the kingdom of heaven is within, which means that the divine is within. And St. Paul told us that every one of us are gods. Know you not that you are gods? Well, we are monads, and monads are gods. Okay. So there's a great cosmic indifference, and this is all about the technique of indifference that we are learning something about here. It is the method of devitalizing and dispersing Maya. So these are some aspects of the glamours and illusions which must be dispelled and dissipated, and in the process discovery will be made that the form is only Maya and can be disregarded. Now, we certainly spend a lot of attention wondering about the welfare of our form as if it were the most important thing. I mean, it is necessary, it's very helpful, but, and it's, you know, we have to have it. At the same time, we have a mistaken notion of divine values when we value the form more highly than that out of which it arose. Okay, so these illusions must be dissipated, etc., and that the form is only the Maya and can be disregarded, that forces can be organized and directed by energy, and that the world of thought, the field of sentient consciousness, and the playground of energies, now notice how he went down, mind, emotions, and etheric physical, that's what he just did, that the forces, the forces can be organized and directed by energy, and that the world of thought, the field of sentient consciousness, the astral body, and the playground of energies, which is the etheric physical, are something apart from the thinker. Now, every day, you know, we need, even if just for a minute or two, to do this disidentification exercise, which is part of Raja Yoga. What Roberto Assagioli said about this is that it is a kind of protection. It's a kind of antiseptic. If we do it every day, our psyche does not become contaminated by glamour, illusion, and Maya. But of course, you know, like everybody else, we may forget to do this and get lost in the Maya. So all of this stuff, the world of thought, the field of sentient consciousness, and the playground of the energies are something apart from the thinker. And I'm going to emphasize that and make it a bit bigger, so drive the point home. We are not that which we see and we think we see and with which we have identified, though, these millions of years. Even if you came from the moon chain, you've still been around for millions of years, right? So, so we've been at it a long time. Okay, there's something apart from the thinker, something apart from the one who feels, and from the actor and player of the many parts which the soul undertakes to play. So we are the actor, we are the thinker, we are the player. These are all wonderful words that describe what we really are behind the play, behind the drama, and behind that which we have created. So what I'm saying here is that the really difficult thing, and something we do all the time, is we tend to identify with our creation instead of standing back and disidentifying. Now, if we want to use this technique of indifference, so to speak. We have to learn really to stand back and disidentify. And in the beginning, it takes a lot of work. Later, for a really advanced soul, it's just second nature. Okay. So the disciple learns eventually to know himself to be, above everything else, whilst in incarnation, the director of forces. Now, so often there's something that's called the veil of impulsion on the etheric plane, and it just means the forces are chaotic and they run us rather than we directing them. So we are the victim of the forces rather than the director of the forces. We have to learn how to be that. These he directs from the altitude, notice that word, of the divine observer, who is really, at first, is the soul, then it's the soul triad, then it's the soul triad monad. Eventually, it is that point of pure being which is utterly detached from all creation, at the same time deeply involved in using creation in order to for redemptive purposes. So we have to learn how to become, and you know, you can look at your own life and see how it's working out, the director of forces. You have to achieve, we have to achieve a sufficient altitude of the divine observer to do this, and through the attainment of detachment. Now, I've talked about these D's before, these five D's. This is a bit of a review, but maybe we could all use the review, and maybe there's some people here who didn't hear this earlier, but the five D's are, well, at least I assign them in this way. There's nothing hard and fast. Discipline for the physical nature. Dispassion for the astral nature. Discrimination for the mental nature. Decentralization for the personal nature. And finally, the overall quality of detachment. The fifth D, as it were, which includes them all and has to do with the soul and the higher aspects of our nature. These are things I've oft told you before. He says, these truths are for you only the platitudes of occultism. And yet, if you could but grasp the full significance of detachment, this is going to be a lesson for all of us, and stand serene as the observing director. Remember, the monad is the director. There would be no more waste motion. Now, that's so often found in Maya. People are just running around, you know, like the proverbial chicken without a head, and they are being run by the forces rather than wisely directing them. There would be no more waste motion, no more mistaken moves, no more false interpretations, no wandering down the bypaths, that's the side paths of daily living, no seeing others through distorted and prejudiced vision, and above all, no more misuse of force. So everything is so clear here about what Maya is, and I'm always amused. You know, sometimes a Master DK uses very arresting words, you know, almost shocking words to get our attention. And at some point, he defines Maya as that unthinking emotional mess. Those are arresting words, are they not? I mean, you know, it's just doing things on impulse without knowing why you're doing them, and because of the past, because of your habit nature. Maya has so much to do with the patterns of the past, which are running you in the present. Okay, so we have to learn through disidentification to be the conscious director of whatever impulses come our way and whatever forces we want to use. So Maya is the misuse of force. Again and again down the ages, the masters have told their disciples, as I have told you, that the occultist works in the world of forces. And I don't think we should exclude energies as well, but there are times when energies do become forces. Forces are perhaps more specifically directed towards specific targets. They start out as energies and then they are applied in the lower worlds. All human beings live and move and express themselves in and through that same world of ever moving, ever impacting outgoing and incoming energies. The rays are outgoing, they are incoming, they have their cycles, so does everything else. If you look at the astrological cycles, a transit begins, it peaks, and then it ends, you know. Outgoing and incoming, everything is in motion, and everything is touching everything else. The occultist, however, it doesn't just live there, the occultist works there. That's the point. Consciously. He becomes a conscious directing agent. He creates upon the physical plane that which he desires. And that which he desires is the pattern of things and the design laid down, now this is a Masonic term, upon the trestle board of the spiritual consciousness by the great divine architect. The great architect of the universe is one of the names of the third ray lord, interestingly. So this is a Masonic reference. And the idea here is there are archetypes, and we are to live according to these divine patterns. They are found in the higher worlds, and we apply them in the lower worlds. Now, you know, what is an archetype and where is it found? Oh, there's so many different archetypes when you compare things to the outer sort of mosaic, congested, chaotic life of the outer plane. On the etheric plane, there are archetypes, but if we go higher on the Buddhic plane, the realm of ideas, the first realm of ideas, there are archetypes there. And finally, on the monadic plane and logoic plane, as far as our cosmic physical plane is concerned, we have the divine purpose reflected in pattern. The divine purpose reflected in pattern. And those are the archetypes. And the Plato, interestingly enough, you know, he called them the forms with a capital F, so to speak. And so these are the great forms thought up, you know, designed by whatever deity we're dealing with in a particular scope, and then they are applied increasingly in the lower and lower chaotic worlds until finally the lower worlds respond archetypally to the greater worlds. So with these patterns, or with the patterns of the lower world, he does not identify himself with the pattern or with the forces which he employs. He may identify himself more with the great divine patterns, which he, as a deity, has actually participated in creating. See, we have all created these great archetypes, but we've forgotten about it, and we've gone forth into the lower worlds, and we've forgotten what we've intended to do. Now, so we have to have right memory in this way and wake up to what we knew before. So anyway, the lesser forces, which are meant to make the archetypes more real, more actual in the lower worlds, we don't identify with those. He moves in the world of Maya, free from all illusion, unhindered by glamour, and uncontrolled by the Mayavic forces. Now, this is obviously a more advanced disciple or initiate. He is arriving rapidly, as far as his own little world is concerned, at the same divine indifference which characterizes Sanat Kumara, the Lord of the world. Because, you know, such a great being as this knows what is real and what is simply a creation and will fall apart. Okay, come together and fall apart. So he has the divine indifference increasingly of Sanat Kumara, and we have to remember that when we think about that old saying that God is no respecter of persons. Well, I will change that a little bit. God is no respecter of temporary aggregations. That's all we are down here, you know, but in terms of the real forms or archetypes in the higher world, God has created them and does respect them. And when I say God, in this case, I mean the planetary logos of our particular planet. Okay, therefore, increasingly, this more advancing disciple becomes aware of the plan as it exists in the universal mind and the purpose which motivates the will of God. Now, when you look for the universal mind, you know, where do you look? In one way, we find it on the atomic plane, but it's a very low expression of the universal mind. When we look back here, we find actually that the universal mind is found on the cosmic mental level, and there are always higher and higher instances of this universal mind as the planes ascend. So, but for practical purposes, the atomic plane, which is the third down on the cosmic physical, is a plane of universal mind. Okay, so let's see if there's anything else I should go through right now. It is this divine indifference which is responsible for the fact that in attempting to describe pure being or God, notice that pure being is God, and every deity is pure being, including ourselves. We are minor deities of pure being, and as we reascend, we will discover ourselves to be the great deity of pure being, but that's another story. And in the effort to arrive at some understanding of the nature of divinity, the formula of negation has been evolved. Now, I'll tell you what, this is too important for me to deal with right now. So I want to deal with this the next time, the next Friday, I suppose. This is the end of the academic section of Dissipation of Glamour Initiative number 41. And we're going to, and what is today? Today is the 16th of June. And what else do I have to do? This is page something or other. Okay. Well, there it is, page 244. Okay. Brett told me we began on 240. We ended on 241 last time, so this is 244. And the next one is going to be the beginning, BGN, of Doggy. All right. Well, there's a reason for that funny little acronym. Number 42, and let's see, I suppose it'll be next week, so let me check the calendar here. This is the 16th, it'll be the 23rd, okay. 23rd of June, 17, now, you know, Tui and I are up here in the Little Bear Meditation Center, and I hope our transmission is adequate. We're doing our best. It's north of the Arctic Circle. Perhaps we don't have the same electronics as we have further south, but we will do our best. Okay, now, we're going to have a little discussion, you know, your questions that may come out, and then we're going to have a meditation. What we're going to do with that meditation today, if we can, is I will say a line in English, and Tuya will translate that into Finnish. We have a number of Finnish people that are with us. If we're successful, we will manage. We'll do our best. We're on two separate computers, and we'll try to work out the timing of things. So now you are free to the floor is open, and if you have questions or thoughts about this subject of divine indifference, not identifying with the Maya, you know, imitating Sanat Kumara in that way that the great beings create for a purpose, but they know the difference between what they are and what they create. Now think about that, how easy it is to forget the difference between what you are and what you create. Brett, is that you?
Yes, we have a couple comments.
Okay.
One from Ann.
Okay.
In the questions.
Okay, so good. We've got to, okay. So, yeah, Frederick says it is coming through. And, well, you know, look, a DK about forces and energies. Some, you know, he doesn't always use these words in a precise way, but sometimes he tries to be precise. And energy is the great reservoir of a particular quality of life. And a force is a direction of application of that particular quality, usually to a sphere of activity which is lower than the sphere at which the energy abides. Now, for instance, there's the energy of Shambhala. There it is on the Shambhalic level. But when we talk about the Shambhalic force, we're talking about the Shambhala impact of that reservoir of energy in a specific way upon a lower sphere or dimension of activity. So I would say forces are more focalized and they tend to become, they tend to be lower in their expression than energies. You need both of them in order to apply the energies, you need forces. But like I say, it isn't always so that DK is entirely specific about this, and sometimes he conflates these two things. But think about it in your own case. You know, we have the energy of the soul on its own level, let us say, and then we have the application of the force of the soul as it is applied to specific aspects of the environment or of the personality. I think that's the best I can do for the moment. It's not a cut and dried thing, but that gives you the idea of the more expansive nature of the energy and the more focalized nature of the force. Okay, hope that does something there, Anne. And good, okay. Now, what else, Brett? Anything else here? Okay.
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. So you are free to raise your hand, to say something, to write something, whatever you like. And let's see here. And you know, Tuya can help me answer these things too. So let's see, where are we? Okay. Now, Frederick. So, would you like to say something, Frederick? Or is it...
Yes,
go ahead, please.
No, it's okay. Yes, can you hear me? Yes,
I can.
Gratitude for your introduction. The issue or the question is, if we apply the 5D, all the detachment, maybe we are not aligned with the current way of living.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not so easy to align between the 5D fully and the current world.
Mm-hmm. I think all of these things we need. And, you know, it was so interesting. Alice Bailey, you know, when some of us used to be secretaries in the Arcane School, you know, maybe 40 years ago, I was a secretary in the Arcane School. And she said, well, the right attitude to have is personally impersonal and impersonally personal. So she developed a little paradox there. So I would say, you know, if I were really to look at this, I would say the right way to deal is to be detachedly attached and attachedly detached. In other words, you're attached to the reality of anything you see, but you are detached from the illusion or from taking the display of whatever you're concentrating upon and thinking of it as the ultimate reality. Of course, ultimately, everything is the ultimate reality, but we have to not go there yet. We have to be very careful in this world of becoming of what we are attached to and what we are detached from. So I would say we are detached from the illusion and attached to the reality behind it. And in that way, I think we can have a balanced approach to bringing the plan into existence. Because he says, look, I'm not trying to induce in you that first ray detachment, which comes from just not caring, you know. I mean, that's not true of all first-rate people, of course, but it's isolated, you know. It just dismisses it and says, I don't worry about it. It's nothing. I'm not trying to induce that in you. And then he tells us a very interesting thing, that pure love, when it is expressed, is an extremely detaching force. So it detaches us from the unreality and attaches us to the reality that lies behind it. So, you know, I answer in a somewhat ambiguous manner here, saying that both detachment and attachment are simultaneously necessary as long as they relate to the correct factors. Is that clarifying, or Do you need something else to be said?
Yes, because I think it's a challenge is to have selective detachment.
Selective detachment, did you say? Selective
because detachment. I think there is no selective detachment. We are detached, and then we are hanging. That means we are helping, and
yes.
I think there is no selective detachment. But I think if we understand the archetype, it's a way to understand how to fit with some set of features and to fit with this kind of archetype. I think the archetype is interesting there.
Yes. This is interesting. You know, there is the world of being and then there's the mosaic world. I call it the world of fragments, which are meant to be reconfigured into the archetypal form. So if we have deep in our heart and, you know, in the heart and the head, what the archetype really is, we'll be able to function properly in this world, which has to be archetypalized and is not yet archetypalized. So, you know, look, if I don't know if you're on the second ray, a lot of us are on the second ray. And when we deal with an issue like detachment, there's kind of an off-putting reaction that some people have to this. I have it myself in many ways, because the second ray is the attached ray. But on the other hand, it's attached through love, which is a form of detachment. So sometimes we say, well, we can't really live if we're detached. We can't really live properly. But I think if we are specific about where the attachment is directed and where the detachment is directed, then we will be more successful in using both modalities. And then we will not have that reaction. You know, some of the Tibetan students, they were so attached to their families. And in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, he says, we learn many, many hard lessons because of our attachment to our families. And he says, you have to learn how to let go of those kind of attachments, and you will meet the same individual on a much higher turn of the spiral, and you will discover there has been no loss of intimacy, no loss of connection. As a matter of fact, it's far more spiritually intimate if you can let go through detachment of the normal types of attachments. Now, those are very hard things to do. I will admit that, you know, it's one of my problems. So I resonate with it. And, but read some of the disciples there. What was her name? Oh, goodness. I know her rays, and Elena is doing a lot of work on her. She's, her rays are ray two soul, ray six personality, ray five mind, ray six astral body, ray six, physical body too, and she had, I think, the sign
Alice Ortiz.
What's her name?
Alice Ortiz.
Alice Ortiz. Yeah, that's it. And do you remember her letters? It was CDP. Is that it?
CDP.
That's it.
CDP.
There is the great example of attachment and the need for detachment of a certain kind in order to reattach as a soul. This is a fundamental thing, Frederick. Fundamental, and the Buddha is a great example of trying to teach us how to deal with it. So somehow we'll manage over time. Okay?
Gratitude.
Thank you, Frederick. Thank you. Okay.
Michael?
Yes, Brett. Yes.
Michael has his hand up.
Okay.
And then we have questions.
Okay, good. Okay, Michael, go ahead.
Good morning, Michael, and everyone.
Good morning.
Divine indifference, which is an extremely important thing to study and learn, was referenced in this section. And for Andre, I think that is something to consider and look at. I recently put together a compilation of divine indifference, which I have not yet posted on the Ageless Wisdom compilation Yahoo website, but it will be there very soon.
Good.
And I did this for a group that I'm working with, after some discussion about concerns about what's happening in the world. So.
Okay, excellent. Now, maybe you could also, when you're ready for that, Brett, how could we access that directly for this group if Michael would send it? Do we know how we could do that? I mean, is there? It's usually a link, isn't it? So it'd have to be a link. Some people would have to join Ageless Wisdom compilation, which you can do. But there must also be a way to just get the document ready for them. Joe, do you know, or you know, is there anything we could do about that?
Why don't we, Michael, Stacy will be in touch with you so we can figure that out and get it to the group.
That'd be great. So if we can get that to them directly. And otherwise, may I also recommend everybody that you do join the Ageless Wisdom compilations. There's a Yahoo group, and there's just so much there. We've been collecting it over years, and it's a great resource, you know. So just write in, and we'll put you on, you know, or we could invite you. But let us know that you want to join Ageless Wisdom compilations, and I'll talk with Kay about that, and we'll see if we can get you on. I know we can get you on, and then you'll have a tremendous resource available to you. A lot of people have done a lot of work over the years. Okay. Okay, what else?
Thank you.
You bet, Michael. Thank you. Glad to hear that's coming. Okay.
We have questions written. Yes. Anne has a couple more comments.
Okay.
And then Rebecca.
Okay, attachment to archetypes, yes, right. Detachment from Maya, right. But of course, what that means is identification with being. The ultimate way of detaching from anything, and we're going to be talking about that next, is to identify with what one really is and disidentify from what you think or have thought you are. So I think that comes up in the next section. Could Michael please repeat the reference from the blue books he just made about family and attachments? Okay, I can't give you the page. But if you go to the discussion of, gosh, where is that? It's in Esoteric Psychology 2. Wow. Let's see if I could, maybe if I look up family and pain, I can find it. Let's see. Okay, so this is, come on, huh? Oh, okay, wait a second. Here we go. This is a query. Okay, let's see if we got this. EP2, and it's family, lesson, children, lessons, or lesson, children, lesson, maybe. It lies, aha, I think I've got something here. In this, look at, secondly, the soul has to relinquish not only its tie and its gain through contact with the personal self, but it has most definitely to relinquish its tie with other personal selves. This is one of the big things in Rule 11, you know. There are four sort of detachments you have to go through before you can really do Rule 11. It must learn to know and meet other people only on the plane of soul. Wow. In this lies for many a disciple a hard lesson. And I think we can all identify this, especially if we have a lot of Ray 2. It must learn to know and to meet other people only on the plane of soul. In this lies for many a disciple a hard lesson. They may care little for themselves and may have learnt much personal detachment. Little may they cherish the gain of contact with the lower personal self. They are learning to transcend all that and may have transcended to a great degree, but their love for their children, their family, and their friends and intimates is for them of supreme importance, and that love holds them prisoners in the three worlds. See, this is exactly the reference I was looking for, page 105, 104 in Esoteric Psychology 2. They do not stop to recognize that their love is primarily love for the personalities and only secondarily for the souls. Upon this rock, many disciples are for lives broken until the time comes when through pain and suffering and the constant losing of that which they so much cherish, their love enters a newer, higher, and truer phase. They rise above the personal and find again, after felt loss and suffering, those whom now they love as souls. They realize that there has been gain and not loss, and that only that which was illusory, ephemeral, and untrue has disappeared. The real man has been gained and can never be lost again. That's exactly the paragraph I was looking for. And on it goes, you know. So this is the most frequent problem of parents who are on the path of discipleship. And it is through their children that the lesson is learned, which can release them for initiation. They hold their children to them. And this, being counter to the law of nature, works out disastrously. It is the height of selfishness, and yet, did they but know and see aright, they would realize that to hold, one must detach, and to keep, one must release. This is the law. Okay, well, there it is, page 104 and 105, and it's a terrific section about this issue of attachment and detachment, and what's the right kind of attachment and the wrong kind. So I trust that that's useful. Certainly useful for me. So there it is. Please, if I am allowed, write me the agent's wisdom. Yeah, you're allowed. Of course, of course. And, okay, this is Anne and Rebecca. And very good, very good. Okay, good, Rebecca and Anne. And for myself, too, I find, boy, this is really something that I need to be reminded of, and we all need to be reminded of. Okay. All right. What else? Anything else, Brent?
That's all I see at the moment.
Okay. Okay. Right. So let's, very good. So we've been at it almost an hour here, but I think it's time for us to, oh, Alex. All right. Alex, go ahead. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, hello to everyone. I just wanted to say that at the moment we're in the grip of glamour and illusion that's coming through the airwaves everywhere, and just how wonderful, significant, and important it is that we have esoteric understanding and a sense and a vision of what's actually going on behind the scenes. So I wanted to say that, quoting John Oliver from the, what's this show called, Last Week Tonight, he said, London is not burning, London is not under siege, and London is not reeling. So just a perspective from where I'm sitting.
Very positive.
Just a perspective from where I'm sitting is my personal experience, which I just want to share with all my dear friends here, is that the truth is that there is a lot of beauty, heroism, unity. The sound waves, the airwaves are full of a sense of hope, of things shifting, of unity rising, and that's not what we hear. It's not what we're told. And so the ever more important need to, you know, go behind the scenes and understand that. And we are at such, we're at such a disadvantage if we believe what we're told and if we believe what we see. And this is the value of dissipating the glamour. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Yes, it's been dramatic in London and in England and in the UK lately, and of course this terrible fire, you know, somehow thrown into the mix, you know. So, but it's interesting. It's obvious that the forces, the personal forces, and the forces of soul are now becoming very, very clear. And, you know, when Christ said, I come to bring not peace, but the sword of discrimination, it's really getting clear who stands for what. At least for people of our nature, we should see it, you know. And you know, it's just obvious that the inner work, although maybe nobody sees it, is very, very powerful. I mean, look, you know, the majority of us have not seen Master DK, hasn't walked into the room, you know, but look at what a tremendous force he is in our lives and in the lives of the modern esotericists. So just because a thing is not seen objectively, we have to identify with the causal position and really ramp up our esoteric work. It's becoming crucial. I've been traveling for a day and I just can't even believe what's happening in the United States. You know, it's just amazing, you know, and of course you have a similar situation, different but similar, in England and the UK and so forth. Yeah. So anyway, and we remember that the United States, UK and Russia are going to be the three major points which will lead humanity forward or not, as we're told in The Destiny of the Nations. We can see why the pressure is upon these particular countries at this time.
Yes, I just wanted to say that hearing the words hope, unity, and goodwill in the media is actually amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's happening. It's happening. So, you know, if they're actually recognizing it, mm-hmm. we can be aware that it's a really powerful force at the moment.
That's right.
And many, many reasons for being positive.
And you know, the thing is, of course, what sometimes draws that forth is the tragedy.
Or the threat,
you know, that the opposite side asserts itself too much, and then the forces of light, which are not always the first to respond, they gather themselves together and they affirm, as you have said. So that's beautiful. Thank you. Okay. Yes, Tuya, can you? Yes, go ahead, Tuya. Okay, hold it. Let's get you there. Yeah, absolutely. Wait a second. You are self-muted, Tuya. Unmute yourself. Go up to the green. Okay. My wife is stranded on the other side of the house. But anyway, come over here and you'll be able to speak. Okay. Now she's going to walk on the air and get here. All right. All right, dear. Here, take this. Take this. Okay.
Yes, thank you. Thanks. Am I heard?
I think Brett, is she heard? Is Tuya heard?
Not yet.
Not yet. Not heard. Not heard. What is going on here? Here, take this. Take this. Go.
Thank you.
Wait, Brett. Still faint. Is this coming through or not? Because something's wrong.
No, it's not coming through.
If I am heard.
No, can't hear her.
There we go. Yeah.
Okay, am I heard now?
No.
No, but do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, Michael.
Well, then I'm going to give Tuya this. We're playing musical headphones here, and she should be able now to speak.
Okay, now you hear me.
That's getting there.
All right, go ahead.
Sorry. Divine indifference.
Yes?
Am I heard now?
Divine difference, yes. I can't help that.
About this moment that we are living, all of these things have to happen. And if we remember what people said about
it's still faint.
Very faint? What about now?
It's all broken up.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Can you?
Okay, I just have to give this.
But you see this thing, look here, this circle to you. Go press that circle. Okay. I'm very sorry that this is happening. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just don't know the difference, and I don't know why, because Tuya can have quite a strong voice when she wants to. So I don't know, and I'm very sorry. that that is happening at the moment. And if she can come in on the other side, somehow we'll do it. Are there any other questions or statements before we get into the... Yeah, okay, let's go on. Yeah, what are they?
The questions have
been
several.
The questions are elapsed now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And here, there's a couple of more things. Archetypes to detached inclusiveness, which I found that is my problem, and working it out through detachment from my family gratitude. Okay, that's Klesia. Okay. Alex, thanks so much for sharing this. This is from Rebecca in Australia. I have literally been having nightmares about London via the BBC images and words. Okay. And the world isn't poor. The world isn't poor energies are everywhere to be found. We have to realize it, and no country will be poor again. It is the way we see our world that bring poverty and pain. Yes, of course, we have to change our thought forms entirely on this. And Frederick said, yes, he does here. I'm sorry for the, we tried to set it up beforehand. And like I say, we're here in the north, and I can't guarantee that our that it's always the best. Okay, so we'll try to work out our sound issues for you. The broadcast worked quite well last night. And by the way, in terms of the broadcast, we're on the morning schedule now. So tomorrow morning, there will be the Soul of the Nations broadcast. You just have to go to the Ask Comprehensive. One link will get you into everything. And then on Sunday morning, we will have the Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes. Okay. Well, I'm sorry if there is any, difficulty hearing. I apologize. Okay. Has everybody spoken who wishes to speak? Alex, did you have one more thing you wanted to say, or did you remove your hand there? Okay. Just want to know. Okay. Apparently not. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. How did you know? I still have one more thing to say. Yes, please, please, nobody have any nightmares. I've actually heard this several times, and I really want to share this message that, yes, these terrible things happen and lives are lost, and and this is what we see, and this is what's sensationalized in the media. But actually, today the news has come out about the girls who've gone in their pajamas to take their examinations from this towering inferno. They've lost everything, and they've sat for their exams. That there are town halls that are absolutely filled to the brim with goods and clothing and things that people have brought. The heroism of the emergency services. The communities are meeting now. They're having gatherings together on the anniversary of the murder of Joe Cox. The political scene has completely shifted here, so that the right-wing policies are losing their grip, and the atmosphere actually is tremendous and positive and wonderful, and I'm sure that's a good thing, and I'm sure it's going to happen in the United States as well. Sure. So it's just that we get so infected by what we're seeing, and we have to see beyond it, and I wish I could share that vision. It's a very good feeling here.
Thank you.
Obviously that's very, yes, it's very course. Distressing. It's also unbelievable good things that are coming out of it as well.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you. It often happens that those who are aligned with the counterforce assert first. And then, if we could be a little more timely, the forces of light, DK, dealt with that, why must we always be waiting for the counter-assertion? But that seems to be the way it is, and at least it happens, and I'm very happy to hear about this. Okay, excellent. Thank you, friends. We're going to try one more time with Tuya here, and you're not... Let's see what. Oh yes. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Try it, Tuya.
Okay. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
That's better.
Yes. Great. So, Hello to everybody. So thank you, Alex. You were bringing me some thoughts about what we have been talking about. One thing was that DK has said that why the clamorers are so difficult is that we don't see them only from their effects. And when we think about all of these effects of the world clamors, the clamors in humanity, which is always related to separatistic ideas and thought forms, whatever divides us is not from the soul, as DK says. I am thinking about the era of Pluto, and those ideas I caught already when Pluto went into Capricorn, that in the end of the era of the forerunners, we should be knowing very precisely what is our job. I was talking a lot in different workshops with people and about the Dharma of their lives, and I was surprised that how many of us were not even like 10 years ago sure what they should be doing in spiritual sense. It was like people were just looking what it might be even 5 years ago, the same thing. But I think it is now the world conditions are exactly forcing us to find our places as disciples. What is our job to do in this life? And it is heading, I think, towards more strenuous conditions because of these fighting forces in humanity. And then when we think about the Buddhas of activity, he was saying somewhere about that how the spirit, in order to find the purpose, there is always activity. So the same way we are supposed to be at the moment very active, it does not mean this Mayavik clamors that it has to be outer activity, but yet we have to be active, strengthen our meditative life. And some of us, we have to be active, of course, in outer form. So that is, I think, one of the key things for all of us to now answer honestly to ourselves. What is my part at the moment in life? What is my activity? What type of activity it is? And we should never force anyone else to follow ourselves, because we have to stand also pretty much alone in our chosen phenomenon or our chosen forum. So in that sense, that the inner connectiveness has to become more and more strengthened. But then also let us understand that this divine indifference or divine difference is also working. It becomes more and more specific. And I think that is one of the clamors. What has to be a one is that now when this is the inner life is forcing us to take our stand. So we have to be there very clear where we are standing and not thinking that our maybe friend, whomever around our circle has to do the same thing. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia. Thank you. Now, I'll tell you what, we'll do this. You have to mute yourself when I'm talking, and I will mute myself when you are talking, okay? So now we're going to do our meditation, and I will, we have some Finnish people with us who could benefit from the translation, so we'll give it in English and in Finnish both. Okay. Okay, friends, so we'll begin, and we will begin with a few moments of silence. And Tuija, you can say that in Finnish.
Eli nyt tulee myös meidän kokeilumme, jossa käännämme myös suomeksi, eli nyt aloitamme tämän mietiskelyn muutamalla hiljaisella hetkellä.
I'll go back on. So let us think about our group, relate to each other as souls.
Kohdistamme ajatuksemme ryhmäämme, eli ajattelemme toisiamme sieluina.
We begin with a protective formula, and I'll read through this first in English, because this is, you know, it can be dangerous work. Glamours are not easily seen. And we'll make the sign of the cross in this way, above, below, to the left, to the right, as we...
Aloitamme valmistavalla vaiheella, suojavalla kaaviolla ja teemme tuon ristinmerkin ylhäältä alas, vasen silmä, oikea silmä, koska tämä on suojaus ja tämä on työ, joka täytyy suojata.
As a soul, I work in light and darkness cannot touch me. I take my place within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move.
Sieluna minä työskentelen valossa, kosketa otsaasi. Ja nyt sydäntä, eikä pimeys voi minua koskettaa. Vasen silmä. Otan paikkani valossa, oikea silmä. Teen työtä, enkä siitä koskaan voi siirtyä.
So we have established our place within the light.
Olemme vahvistaneet itsemme valossa.
Now, preparatory stages, the first thing we do is we think about the etheric physical light of matter and the light of the lower mind.
Kaksinainen valo, ajattelemme ensin aineen valoa, eteeristä tasoa ja sitten valoa mielessä.
And then we have the meditative attitude towards soul contact. We recognize, imaginatively at least, soul light.
Nyt mielikuvassasi käännä kohdista tietoisuutesi valon, joka on sielussa, eli sielun valo.
There are now three lights, and in our imagination, we merge the two lesser lights of mind and matter with the light of the soul.
Olemme nyt keskittyneet kolmeen valoon. Yhdistä mielessäsi kaksi alempaa, eli aineen valo ja mielen valo. Yhdistä se sielun valoon.
And all three of these come together on the plane of lower mind. We imagine that.
Kaikki nämä kolme tulevat yhdeksi alemmalla mielen tasolla.
And now we're going to say together. First we'll do it in English, then Finnish, and then we'll have the three ohms. This recognizes the fact that the three lights are one light. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day.
Vahvistamme tämän kolmen valon tuloa yhdeksi. Valo on yksi, ja siinä valossa näemme valo. Tämä on se valo, joka muuntaa pimeyden päiväksi, ja nyt kolme omia.
Now we're going to use the formula relating the inner world of light to the world of glamour on the astral plane.
Nyt sisäinen valo kohdistetaan harhaan astraalisella tasolla.
So imagine as you say these words, think these words with us or say them out loud at home. Radiance and power are we. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the world of heavens, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour.
Ja sanomme yhdessä, virittäydymme yhdessä, säteily olemme ja voima. Seisomme ikuisesti ojennetun käsiin, yhdistäen taivaan ja maan, tarkoituksen sisäisen maailman ja harhan hiuksen hienin maailman.
We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day.
Kurkutamme valoon ja tuomme sen alas täyttämään tarpeen. Kulkutamme hiljaiseen paikkaan ja tuomme sieltä ymmärryksen lahjan. Näin työskentelemme valon kanssa ja muutamme pimeyden valoksi.
A great searchlight has been created. We visualize that coming from the group. And we're turning that light upon the astral plane as we link the higher worlds with the world in which glamour must be dissipated.
Ja nyt näemme suuren valokeilan, joka muodostuu ryhmistä ja joka kääntyy kohti ashari-tasoa, yhdistäen korkeamman valon siihen maailmaan, jossa on haraa.
We will visualize this now.
Ja visualisoi tämä nyt.
Now we're going to deal with the glamour of personality. It's one of those he mentions, and it's very much like the glamour of egoism.
Ja nyt keskittäydymme persoonallisuuden harhaan, joka on samantapainen kuin egotismi, itsekkyys.
This glamour makes us forget the soul and think that the personality is the only and most real part of our nature.
Tuo, mikä saa meidät ajattelemaan, että ei ole sielua eikä emmekä kykene sielukontaktiin, vaan että on ainoastaan persona.
There is a tremendous battle raging now between the soul of humanity and its personality.
Ihmiskunnassa nimenomaan nyt on noussut erittäin suuri taistelu persoonan ja sielun välillä.
So we have to help people who are trapped in thinking that the personality is reality. We have to help them realize that the soul is the reality.
Meidän tulee nyt auttaa ihmisiä siinä, missä ajatellaan, että persoonallisuus ja persona on todellisuutta, kontra, että sielu on todellisuus.
So think about that for a minute yourself, about what is real in your life, soul or personality, which is more real.
Hetken aikaa pohdiskele itsessäsi, kumpi on itsellesi todellisempaa, persona vai sielu.
We talk a lot about the soul, but do we identify as the soul?
Puhumme paljon sielusta, mutta kykenemmekö identifioimaan itsemme sieluun?
Now we're going to utter the words of power one at a time. And then we're going to go into our 5 minutes of silence.
Ensin käymme läpi voimien sanat ja sen jälkeen menemme 5 minuutin hiljaisuuteen.
the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of personality.
Yhdistetyn valomme voima estää persoonallisuuden harhan ilmentymisen.
The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of personality from affecting humanity.
Yhdistyneen valomme voima tekee tyhjäksi persoonan harhan laadun ja sen vaikutuksen ihmiskunnassa.
And we may realize that the power of decentralization is needed if the quality of the glamour of personality is not to affect humanity.
Me huomioimme, että voima, joka irrottaa meidät keskipisteestä, tarvitaan nyt, jos ajattelemme, että voitamme persoonan harhan ihmiskunnassa. Siis se voima, joka keskittää itsemme persoonaan, se täytyy hävitä.
The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour of personality.
Yhdistyneen valomme voima hävittää persoonallisuuden harhan takana olevan elämän.
So now in these 5 minutes of silence, we will see our searchlight penetrating into the glamour, weakening it, dissipating it,
ja nyt meidän valokeilamme kohdistuu tuon harhaan ja näette kuinka se hälvenee, pienenee, se tulee heikommaksi ja lopulta häviää.
So now the silence.
Ja nyt 5 minuutin hiljaisuus.
And so the soul is strengthened, and we decentralize from the personality.
Ja sielu on nyt vahvistettu, ja persoonallisuudesta me hajannutamme itsemme persoonallisuudesta tai erottaudumme persoonallisuudesta.
And we visualize the great sun representing soul shining throughout the astral plane.
Näin nyt visualisoi suuri kirkas aurinko, joka säteilee astraaliselle tasolle, astraalitason yllä.
Now we withdraw our searchlight and bring it back to the plane of mind.
Ja nyt pidämme valokeilan takaisin mentaaliselle tasolle.
And for the moment we turn off our searchlight, our group searchlight.
Ja nyt mielikuvassamme sammutamme tämän valokeilan.
And seeing that there has been at least some imaginative clarification, we will sound the om 3 times.
Ja nyt näemme, että on ainakin mielikuvassamme tapahtunut kirkastumista. Ja lausumme 3 om.
So, friends, let us watch developments in the world very carefully.
Ja rakkaat ystävät, katsomme hyvin tarkasti, mitä maailmassa tapahtuu.
And let us imagine and see the light of the soul increased and the importance of the personality decreased.
Ja näemme, että sielun valo vahvistuu ja persoonallinen voima haalistuu.
And this fits so well with our Gemini energies these days. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow.
Ja tämä koko ajatus sopii hyvin kaksosten perusajatukseen. Minä huomioin toisen itseni ja tämän itsen kasvaessa minä säteilen ja voimistun.
Thank you very much for being here, and Brett will get this up on Makara as soon as possible, and please feel free to share this with others who may not have been able to attend. We need to create an inner group of some strength to back up the work of the men and women of goodwill who are working strenuously in the world to see that the higher values emerge. And of course, glamour, illusion, and Maya prevent so often these higher values from being properly expressed. So Tui and I want to express our gratitude to you for your work. And tomorrow, remember, at
5 a.m.
Yeah, 5 a.m., that's it.
5 a.m. GMT and at 8 o'clock Finnish time. But Michael, I would like to suggest we have been working already somewhat, and I think we could sometimes have a session where we would share our learnings through these meditations, because I think there has come powerful insights
okay.
for everybody.
Well, we'll do that. And in some of our discussions, of course, that is, we are invited to do that, but we can have a specific presentation in which we do exactly
Specifically from this meditation, because we always finish after the meditation. We don't share these insights.
Okay. All right. Good thought. Thank you, everybody. And see you tomorrow morning for the Soul of Nations, and on Sunday morning for Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes. Lots of love to everybody, and farewell for the moment. And by the way, in terms of the academic work on triangles that we started, we always have that on Saturday, and it's at the time when the Soul of Nations is not. In other words, the Soul of Nations tomorrow will be in the AM. So if we were doing the academic work in triangles, it would be in the PM. And if the Soul of Nations is in the PM, then the academic work in triangles will be in the AM. But I'm giving myself another week here just to get adjusted before starting on that academic work from the science of triangles, restarting that. Okay, bye-bye.
And everybody, welcome to Lapland.
Okay, here we are north of the Arctic Circle. We'll carry you here in the mountains and so forth. Maybe someday you get to come up and join us. Okay, bye-bye for now.